Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis. Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, and you?
I'm not too bad. So let me declare my bias. I am calling as president of the Heart and Stroke Foundation, and I want to congratulate the team on their presentation thus far. It, for me, has really been preaching to the choir, but I want to be a bit more...
Can you just identify yourself, since you have identified your post?
Kenneth Connell.
Yes, Dr. Kenneth Connell.
Yes, thank you, sir. So, here is my question. Here's my statement first. We've spoken a lot about all of the various interventions, such as the public fairs and the education and all of those things. And I couldn't help but wonder whether we are not doing something wrong. I will use COVID-19 as an example. Safely to say, without solid and rigid public policy, are we not fighting a losing battle? And where does policy come from? Policy really comes from government. So with all the best intentions that civil society organizations may have, Heart and Stroke including, and many others, I just wonder whether we are not taking micro steps if we do not have an adequate public policy, which is policed and regulated by the people who are in authority to police and regulate such policies, and that is our government. Are we holding our government as accountable as we should, given in mind that we are not only putting ourselves at risk, but future generations?
Why are you asking that question, though?
Well, I'm asking that question simply because there has been a lot of discourse and advocacy and by Heart and Stroke Foundation and other organizations, and we haven't seen the uptake. And as I said, I use COVID-19 as an example. So look at the uptake that has happened there. Of course, this is an infectious disease. We're all worried about getting sick. But yet, cardiovascular disease kills more people annually than this disease ever can, and it hasn't attracted the attention. I don't know whether it is a case of we have become accustomed to hearing the advocacy soundbite, whether we are comfortable with it, and we don't think, for instance, if I have hypertension, I can give it to you. What is it about this disease that we can learn from in our own fight against NCDs?
And what specifically do you want to see government do now as a matter of urgency to give that kind of profile to the issue?
Yeah, so that is an easy question. Government needs to enact with immediacy a full nutrition policy for schools. It cannot be a situation where we continue to work on it and fine-tune it. Because really, realistically, when you look at it, we are not putting just this generation at risk for a pandemic, but we are putting future generations at risk. We know the NCDs have poor outcomes in these situations. So government needs to enforce that policy. Secondly, there needs to be a policy on marketing of these types of products in high-risk groups. And who are the high-risk groups? Children. So we cannot have, for instance, the fast food industry marketing in schools because we know it is a high-risk activity. Thirdly, there has to be the right optics. So at our national events, at our any situation where there is a public discourse, the message of NCD prevention and childhood obesity need to be out there. In other words, what I'm saying is our conversations have to translate now into policy and regulation.
But there's got to be some factor or set of factors that have created this environment of a lot of talk and very little action. What has been identified or have been identified as the factors that are working against the kind of policy implementation that you want to see?
So I am hypothesizing here because I cannot speak to what really are the legitimate barriers. So if I had to hypothesize, I would basically lump them into two categories. One is we have become comfortable. You know, we've this is nothing new. We've been speaking about hypertension and diabetes and childhood obesity now for some time. And so the messaging, even in the childhood obesity circle, may be somewhat numbing at times. Secondly, there is a phenomenon with infectious diseases that non-infectious diseases don't have. And that is, as I said to you, David, if you are in a room and you think you can catch something from someone, you are going to be a lot more careful. And so policy against those kind of things, you can expect, are going to be faster. The third thing is, and this is probably most critical at a government level, I am not convinced that we see the potential impact of reversing our whole socioeconomic space by not addressing these things as urgent. You know, so let's take, for instance, our travel policy and reopening our economies. You don't have to argue or convince any businessman that this is important for the survival of our country. But when it comes to implementing policy for NCDs, we are more comfortable because we don't see the threat reversal of our very livelihood, which is something mentioned consistently by government, and we are more comfortable. So in direct response to your question, I think that we are at a stage where the messaging has become numbing, the society in itself does not see the urgency, and we may not be seeing the potential catastrophe that lies ahead for us.
That's Dr. Kenneth Connell, President of the Heart and Stroke Association. We'll take a call when we return to this edition of Down to Brass Tacks.
My name is Jeremy Lovell. I have type 2 diabetes. Eating junk food and drinking sugary drinks increases the risk of type 2 diabetes. Having type 2 diabetes is so hard. Our children's health is at risk. Cut out those unhealthy foods, sugary drinks, especially in our schools.
Act now. Protect our children's health. Support policy that restricts unhealthy foods and sugary drinks in schools.
A message from the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Barbados, Pan American Health Organization, United Nations Children's Fund, and partners.
It's 10:50 in Barbados. We go up until 11 o'clock with a special look at childhood obesity prevention in Barbados with the Special Coalition. With us on Zoom, we have Dr. Diane Brathwaite, Clinical Director with the Barbados Diabetes Foundation, Dr. Natasha Sobers-Granum, Lead Researcher with the George Allen Chronic Disease Research Center, and Lecturer in Public Health and Epidemiology at the Cahill Campus of the University of the West Indies, Abigail Johnson, a youth advocate and a medical student at UE, and Francine Charles, Program Manager with Childhood Obesity Prevention Project at the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Barbados. Let's take a call. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, good afternoon. Good morning.
Dr. Connell, my name is Art. I will buy you drinks. Drinks on me, my man. Seriously, you were speaking for me. Why can't I understand? A doctor making so much sense? My man, drinks on me. You tell me where you want to go. Make them expensive. You speak for me, my friend. I'll call again. Keep calling. I'll let you. You are big time great. Great human being. The other doctors are cool. They all want to get to, but Dr. Connell is the bomb. Big time. The bomb. Here's the thing. The man that sells the most sweet drinks in the Caribbean. He owns the company that sells the most sweet drinks in the Caribbean. Where in Jamaica? You went in Jamaica? And he is a medical doctor. He's a doctor of medicine. He's a PhD of economics or anything like that. He's a medical doctor. And he's selling more sweet drinks than anybody else through the entire Caribbean. And somehow that should send a message. You know, it doesn't matter. I mean, first, do no harm means nothing in this part of the world. You have to recognize that unless you legislate and force people's hands, nothing will happen. You go to Canada and you go and buy a drink. I had to go and buy Ribena. Because the drinks up there are so bland, well, you can't get another taste, right? Because I'm so used to, I had to go and buy Ribena and add water to it. Because you cannot buy a sweet drink in that part of the world. They've legislated it. A certain amount of trans fat, a certain amount of salt, percentage. A certain percentage of sugar for all commercially available products. That is it. Legislation. And then, you're going to focus on school children. You're going to focus on a whole population. And the only way that's going to happen, Dr. Connell, as Dr. Connell says, is to legislate it. Legislate. But we got cowardly prime ministers. You know, it's talk big and song sweet. But when it comes to making the big decisions, I was here. I was alive. I heard somebody call in last year that owns a company in Barbados that sells sweet drinks and said, Barbados like sugar. They like sweet. Are we all doing a service in the market? I mean, that is not acceptable. David Ellis was actually programmed when that happened. That is not acceptable. You need... And that's what they're there to do.
All right, sir. Thank you very much. Don't a brass tacks.
Hello. Very good morning, Mr. Ellis, and to your esteemed panel. Thanks.
Morning.
Morning. Thanks for taking my call. Don't want to be quite as passionate as the individual, but in going into schools, I want to implore the panel to have the students divide by four. In other words, if you do that, when you look at a nutritional facts label, you would see that 8 teaspoons of sugar, 7 teaspoons of sugar, is in a serving, 9 teaspoons of sugar, and this is a 250 milliliter size. And in with these sizes, there are four servings per container. So no one knowingly would put that amount of teaspoons of sugar in their tea or in their water for sweet water or anything like that. The other thing is high fructose corn syrup. Someone talk about a pinch of sugar or stealing sugar from or taking sugar from the sugar jar. That's not the kind of sugar that is the problem here. It's high fructose corn syrup. And that was not around years ago. One of the things I would suggest the panel do is get in touch with Dr. Robert Lustig. He is single-handedly taking on the sweet drink and soft drink companies. He's written several books, Sugar, the Bitter Truth, Fat Chance, and A Calorie is Not a Calorie. These are things that he proves. His thesis on these things are super. So I would love to work with, you know, this team, this distinguished team, in talking to school children. If they divide by four, again, when they look at a nutritional fact, I mean, total 31 grams of carbohydrate. Again, that's 8 teaspoons. 29 on some of these sweet drinks, and what they call fruit drinks, really. I wouldn't bother to call the name, of course, but this is what you're up against. So you need to tell the children to divide by four, and they'll know how many teaspoons of sugar they're consuming.
Somebody wants to get a clearer idea of what are these foods that should be avoided, the unhealthy ones. This is someone writing to us via the chat.
Yes. Diane?
Yeah, sure. Hi. That's a big question for a short amount of time because we're nearly finished. However, first of all, you want to remove most of the sugar-sweetened beverages from your diet, as many as you can. Really and truly, we're 70% water. We really should be drinking more water as opposed to drinking juices all day, as compared to like a lot of patients that I see. We need to look at our portion sizes of food. In a lot of the cases, portion sizes are too large. Even portion sizes that are given to children are bigger than adult portion sizes. You want to also, just to keep it very simple, think about eating naturally. That's why I always tell my patients, eat things that are natural and less processed. Because we don't have like lots of enforceable standards on processed foods here. A lot of the times we're getting a lot of sugars and salts and other things in the processed foods that we're purchasing. It's not that you can never have them, but it shouldn't necessarily be your, this is how I eat all day. These are things that should be treats as opposed to regularities. And then things that are obviously sweetened with sweeteners, honeys, jam puffs, those type of nice processed treats. They tend to be less healthy, so you may want to limit those as well. But to that caller, they can always contact me at the Diabetes Center if they want to get more specific information, because this forum does not allow enough time to go into any more depth on that.
Would cooking at home help a little bit more?
Oh, absolutely. Cooking at home would definitely help. And I think we have to, as I said, we have to make take everything into perspective. What we're seeing nowadays is that people buy more food, we buy more ready food, we buy more canned food, and there's less cooking at home. So therefore, it means two things. Number one, we can't actually necessarily control what's going into our body as well. And then we're getting more chemicals, more additives, etc. I mean, just pick up a can and look at how many things are inside that can to preserve some corn or some peas or something like that. Okay, so cooking at home definitely will help. And if you're going to cook at home, you may want to think about how you structure it, because many parents are busy, and therefore sometimes prepackaging food becomes a little bit difficult. But it just all calls for a little planning. While I have this forum here, because I know we're going to finish very quickly, I just wanted to make a few points if I can ask to do that. I just want to point out 17.9 million people die of cardiovascular disease annually. 900,000 died from COVID. Put it in perspective, cardiovascular disease and NCDs is a much bigger pandemic than COVID. COVID came, and what did we do? We set out a whole set of rules and regulations. Everybody must adhere to them. What have we done for cardiovascular disease and diabetes in Barbados? To change it, okay? Put it in perspective. My other thing is, what they've shown is that persons who had poor outcomes who were under the age of 60, their risk factor was obesity with COVID. And so therefore, in the kids who were dying in the US and other ways, obesity was factoring in as the underlying predisposing factor to poor outcomes and mortality. So much so that last month in Mexico, they have actually banned the marketing of sugary beverages and food items to children under the age of 18. It is legislation. We have to have legislation to help support these things. I went to England, as a caller said, I drank a Coke and I could not believe it was a Coke. And as a medical person, what kind of rang out to me was, so why are we sending these highly sugary beverages to Barbados, but in England, it is not good enough for their people, but it's good enough for us. So we need to put everything in perspective, and we have to have the things in place, both what I would call a multi-sectorial and a multi-ministerial approach towards protecting us in Barbados from NCDs and protecting our future generation.
That was Dr. Diane Brathwaite, Clinical Director with the Barbados Diabetes Foundation. We also heard from Dr. Natasha Sobers-Granum, Lead Researcher with the George Allen Chronic Disease Research Center, and a lecturer in public health and epidemiology at the UWI Cave Hill campus. Abigail Johnson, youth advocate and medical student at UE, and Francine Charles, program manager with the Childhood Obesity Prevention Project at the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Barbados. They brought you this first hour of Down to Brass Tacks, in which we looked at childhood obesity prevention in Barbados. This is Down to Brass Tacks. This is Down to Brass Tacks, 4307300. That's the 4341790, sorry. That's the number for you to call. You know, last week there was some talk here about the banks, and there was a complaint that some people were going to banks and finding that the banks were refusing to cash their checks unless they had accounts with that particular bank. Now, I followed up on this matter, and I'm told that there are two banks in Barbados that are doing it. And I have asked, what's the rationale? The Bankers Association said to me that I would have to speak to the banks involved directly, because they can't give a reason for what is happening. Now, last week, somebody wrote in here and said it had to do with trying to meet anti-money laundering specifications. That does not seem to be the case, because if that were so, then it would not only apply to those two banks, it would apply to all of them. So something else is at work, and we need to find out what it is. I would also draw your attention to this, because there's legislation in Barbados relating to bills of exchange. It says here, that a bill of exchange is an unconditional order in writing addressed by one person to another, signed by the person giving it, requiring the person to whom it is addressed to pay on demand or at a fixed or determinable future time a sum certain in money to or to the order of a specified person or to bearer. Now, the question is whether a commercial bank that is forcing people to go in the direction of opening an account to get a check cashed when the person who has issued the check has money on the account and should be entitled to get that money paid to the person to whom they've issued the check, is the bank in breach of the law? That's a major question that arises from this. I have asked one lawyer, and that person says, yes, they are breaching the law. He says, in addition, they are breaching the contract between them and the client. There will either be an express or implied term that the bank will honor checks drawn on the customer's account. How is it that these two commercial banks are being allowed to get away with this bad behavior in the country? You know, there's got to be somebody out there to protect our interests. And at least you need to know that this is not considered to be the right thing for them to be doing. And as a customer, you have a right to question their behavior. This kind of behavior is really unacceptable. I wait to see whether we will be able to make contact with the banks involved and what they are saying, what they are giving as the rationale for taking this kind of decision, because it is punitive to many people, especially the elderly people in this country who have a host of complaints about what's going on. We'll have more to say and to hear about that as this program continues. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Hello.
Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.
Hi, Miss Ellis.
Yes, ma'am.
Blessed day to everyone. You finished with the childhood obesity
question? Yes, ma'am.
Oh, I wanted to comment on that.
You can comment on it any day. So.
Okay. All right. I see it as the personal responsibility of the home, the parents, because by the time the children get to school, if they're not being fed a proper diet at home, it would be the drinks, you know, that would help exacerbate the situation. But I'm looking at it that, okay, we go to the clinic, we see the doctor until we're ready to have the baby. We're well taken care of. We're given instructions as how to deal with the baby. We take the baby to the clinic. They get the shots. And then that is finished, the children ready to go to school at 4 or 4 and a half, and then go and get the last shot. I think we need to continue as a nation the health personnel to follow up on our children. They are our greatest possession. And mothers now, families, a mother that might be a single parent, she's working for $250 a week or less. What is she going to buy when she goes to the supermarket? What can she buy?
What are her options? Because your argument seems to be one that says it is more expensive to eat well. In other words, to avoid the sugary drinks and to avoid the snacks. Is it more expensive to do that?
Okay. What I have come along and seen, your parents go, they buy rice, they buy flour, you buy meal, you buy English potatoes, you buy things that we stretch. And those things, you know, carbohydrate turns to sugar. So actually, you're eating a lot of sugar. You buy the flour to make bits, it's all dumplings or whatever.
But it's not a question of how much you eat. It is a question of how much you eat at one time. You still have to have some element of it in your diet. But it is the balance that you are talking about.
But the thing is, the full bellies. the thing is, let me be real, the thing is a full bag. You might have a big set of macaroni pie, you cook some rice, you cook, you may or may not do a little salad on the side, but the most of the food on your plate is going to carbohydrate. And
so isn't that something that you have to work on?
Right, that's what I'm saying now. We have to be teaching the younger parents now, because we're looking at the up-and-coming generation along with those who can be listening now to learn something. Okay, teach the younger person, teach the younger women the portion sizes that is acceptable, and also, you know, you buy your okra, you buy your piece of pumpkin, and you put it there on the plate, whereby the children can get accustomed to it. Because if they get accustomed to a whole set of rice and potatoes and things, where you put a little bit of okra or whatever next to it, sometimes they don't want it. But so if they come along with that, so that's what I'm saying, the health authorities, the health nurses that used to come around years ago and check you out, you know, we have to get back to something like that to make sure that the children are getting the right type of thing. But the money that a lot of our younger persons are working for, honestly, it can't, as you were saying, it, to buy a lot of things that would be helpful to the debt, it's out of their reach sometimes, honestly. And that is one swing. There's another swing where parents have money, and the children, they get a lot of fast food. They get a lot of greasy chicken and all kind of thing. That also need to be looked at.
All right,
so you got to hit it from more than one side.
All right. Thank you very much. Don de Brass Stacks, hello. Welcome to the program.
How are you?
I'm well, and you?
Oh, I am blessed. And how was yesterday for you? You spent your weekend?
Quite well.
That's good. Now, Mr. Ellis, I'm going to be very straightforward this morning. Now, the Minister of Public Works recently changed the direction of a line in a road. I don't think that was appropriate in that he have disgraced the technical officers in that ministry. That is one. You have to say,
huh? He has disgraced the technical officers?
Yes, because...
Oh, but that may be so, but, I mean, he was also being embarrassed by the decision of the technical officers.
No.
If the traffic is backing up all over the highway and that sort of thing, up to Hothersill turning and people are complaining bitterly, what do you see that as? Isn't it an embarrassment to him and to the government?
You just don't go and put down a solid... I did my investigation. You just thought it was in the works for a long time.
That doesn't matter. Because it was in the works for a long time doesn't necessarily mean that he was not embarrassed by it.
And it wasn't approved.
Well, it might not have been approved by him.
Well, it was approved, so they figured it was the go-ahead.
What he said was that it wasn't approved by him as minister, and it wasn't approved by the permanent secretary.
But
so who approved it?
Well, I get told we got approved.
Who approved it?
It would have been approved by the last minister.
The last minister? Well, I don't
know.
Which
will be Mr. Dugate. This is a member of the Barbados Labour Party. Call. You won't play. You don't know what you're talking about.
No, because I haven't heard any word to that effect.
So if
it had been approved by Dr. Dugate, one would have expected that that would have been said. And I don't know that we would have to sit down here and rely upon your word to establish that.
But no, in this situation, that Mr. Dugan might come on and say something.
No, but I want you to tell me how you know.
My David, I know.
You know what? I don't have no proof that you know.
You come here
and you say a lot of things on the radio that I don't have proof about. And I mean,
you give the proof, you don't want
to hear. You never give me a piece of proof about anything at all yet. Never.
Listen,
all you got is talk.
I will hear that from you, but let me tell you this now. You will talk about the traffic buying at the horse and turning. But what about the traffic for the life of Barbados down to Kentucky, Camaro, in the morning?
So you have said that to say what? That they got some lines down there that need to be changed to?
I would never say that.
I don't understand what point you're making.
I never tell you that. I tell you that there's a problem between Kentucky, Camaro, and life of Barbados. So don't take my point in a leg of ease 50 traffic. That is done for certain people who want to get through four roads. You guys still got a problem down the road? When you leave four roads, you're going to places. You're going to end up in front of the bank, or you're going to end up down the Akifas. Right or wrong, or you don't know the roads in Barbados.
Well, part of the problem, don't forget that were long discussing the need for some alternative solution to the problem. It was anticipated that we would get more and more traffic on the road, and at peak periods, there are some junctions that are just a nightmare. That whole situation there by Life of Barbados, I mean, you see it every morning, you see it every afternoon. And at one stage, there was a discussion about flyovers, but there was also some concern about how we were going about trying to implement that. So because of the controversy that surrounded it, it seems as though flyovers have now been tossed out the window. Nobody really wants to talk about that, but we may very well have to return to it.
But Mr. Ellis, yes. Even with that road, I am telling you, they still got a backup of traffic between Life of Barbados and Kentucky and Camaro. That is two, three. You know, you talk about, I don't bring proof and I do a lot of talking.
That's true, because if somebody here says, this guy is a troublemaker, please do not entertain him. So it's not just me who got that feeling, you're a troublemaker.
That is one, two. When I talk about Greenland and the garbage cans, you laugh at it too.
The garbage cans or Greenland and garbage cans?
Are you play it. You know when I say they should never build Greenland, they should have given each household four garbage cans and sort out the garbage there and we got a better distribution of the garbage.
We used to call it calling programs so long since the days of Greenland?
Longer than that, yeah. This is too. I remember a
that means you've been a troublemaker for so long.
But you on the devil's side today, right? So you have your power. When I got my power, you'll be vets. When you got yours, I go and be vets. Because we are brothers and we understand, we agree to disagree. Now, back then, when Mr. Anthony Wood, was the Minister of Education, I made a suggestion about education. I even gave him the document that I wrote. And I remember...
You wrote a document too?
You want to see document? You want me to read document for you to read? Yes or no?
Man, bring it. Let me see what you write. Leave it at your front desk for me.
Good, I will do that for you. I even
it's handwritten or is you
type. I don't handwrite nothing. I handwrite it and then I have it typed. Now, Mr. David Thompson had a meeting at Christ Church Auditorium, and I also gave him a document when he became Prime Minister of this country. Right? Dealing with education, because I say back then I was laughed at, but you got to go to university for idiots like me and troublemakers like me who is called the program to try to educate the people for some boyfriend from the university, I tell you all. I keep saying, if people cannot read, you can read something, but you must read and understand what you're reading. I can take you to places now that when you start to talk to people, every other word out of their mouth is a curse word because they do not know about reading and they don't know about understanding what they read.
All right,
so the reading problem is a big problem. Now, the last and final thing. You remember a gentleman called Mr. Ronald Jones?
Can't forget him. He used to be a Minister of Education here, right. If you're talking about the same person.
We're talking about the same person. You remember he gets a lick for saying that Barbados population is too small?
He said, was he criticized for that, or was it the way that he talked about the need for us to produce more people?
My David, whether he was criticized, we say, nowadays we got people in this country. Right? Because I always believe if I can tell you how to bake a cake, I should know how to bake it. Telling walking up and down this country, telling women that they need to get children. The population is 80,000. Short. Right now, we can't even feed for the people we got in Barbados. We ain't got no houses in Barbados. Where are you going to put 80,000 people? Tell me, David.
They got enough room. They got small countries that have big populations and they're able to accommodate them.
Yes, I can accommodate them.
Remember,
spare food.
Part of the problem, well, you bring in enough food. You see, once the people are working and they help to earn foreign exchange for Barbados, then you're in a better position to import what you need as well and to grow what you also need to eat. You know, the problem is that we haven't been replenishing the population at the level that we should have been. And, you know, that has serious implications for the national insurance scheme to begin with. So, you know, we can't do it all with the limited resources. And people like you, all you do is you produce policy papers and come here and give me trouble every Monday and Friday. People like you should be doing more.
We were talking another time.
Yes, sir. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Morning.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm okay.
I'm going to touch on a subject that's not my main thing, but listening here from this point of view, your last caller there, well, he was jumping up as though he works at the ministry. The way he talk,
I'm speaking with such authority.
Yeah, well, I thought he knew, but it is clear that he doesn't understand what's going on. If the minister took a decision like that, and the minister was very clear. He said he spoke to his PS. And prior to that, the PS had no knowledge of it. It was not a policy decision. He was very clear on what he said. And not finding that in place, he took the necessary permission to clear. And I respect him for that. And I think a lot of people in Barbados respect him for that. No fuss whatsoever. The workers and all were very happy on the course that was taken. That is not what I call you about. And even, just let me touch the one before that, with, you know, this fancy talk. It is hard to come on the air and talk all these fancy things. We know what diabetes is about. We know what you should do and what you shouldn't do. But in days like today, some people cannot make a meal in the house because of the lack of contribution towards that meal. It is easier for some households to buy a food for $15 and try to divide it in four or so, where they don't have to purchase the various items because they cannot afford it and divide it between those people inside it. It's okay to sit down and come and talk these fancy things, but to actually put it in place is a whole different ball game. And I would leave that at that. The only other thing about it is that some of these people that come and talk very pretty on these programs, nobody don't vote for them. So if they think some of the politicians are that silly to go there and interfere with a lot of those small people who are making a dollar to stay alive, I'm not saying that you cannot control, but if they think politicians are going to go there and run those people from around the school who are there trying to make a living to help other people in a house and help pay bills, whatever they might be, I think they've got another story coming.
So that's the other, other side of this particular problem.
Pardon?
That's the other side of the problem.
Exactly, that they're not looking at. My subject, Mr. Ellis, that I call you about this morning, unemployment in Barbados, I think we know where it is.
Yes.
But I am wondering why then, that when there are certain opportunities open, that the persons involved who try the best to see if they can help with these situations cannot get the necessary assistance.
Example?
No, there's a opening where some persons in Barbados at the current moment are trying to accumulate some young people to work on the Mississippi River, on barges, etc. It is known by government ministers, plural. But you know, this is going on a year that you cannot get anything off to this. The Minister of Labor But you don't know that you can't get any help where the situation like this is waiting. People are waiting to have a few people recruited out of Barbados to go and earn a dollar outside, and you can't get the necessary help. I take the opportunity today to make this call because, you know, some people are very fearful, but at my age, well, what I got fear now, the only thing I got fear is sickness and death.
What is the help that is required? What is the help that would be required from government on this?
It required the government to assist the group to get those visas. The embassy is not going to touch visas, let's say, in the tune of, in any amount, don't let me call any figures. That's not my forte. Don't let me call any figures. But unless the government signs off on this, the embassy will not touch a matter of this. And I would like to thereby making this call have those persons that know about the situation do something so that some Barbadians can get some extra dollars coming back here to help people who well deserve it, which is their families. And I would leave that at that and see where we go from there, where the necessary person will hear it on this call-in program. Have a good day, sir.
Thank you very much for your call. This is Down to Brass Tacks.